25 years ago, a generational Milwaukee Bucks team brought the city together and brought the Bradley Center to life.
This is the place to be.
Led by a Hall of Fame coach and the legendary Big Three. The Bucks let it fly. And went on the deepest playoff run in decades.
Absolute bedlam here at the Bradley Center.
I'm Jim Paschke, and this is Light It Up, Season 7 of the Behind the Bucks podcast, presented by Gallagher on the Bucks Plus Audio Network. This is Episode 1, The Big Three. Extraordinary talent. Offensive firepower.
Running three-pointer, good!
A fiery head coach.
It's your attitude and competitive spirit that is being tested right now.
Veteran leadership. And one of the greatest home court advantages in the NBA.
Is it me or is it loud in here?
All came together to help the 2000-2001 Milwaukee Bucks win more regular season games than any Bucks team in 16 years.
Love to celebrate here at the Bradley Center.
But in order to take that next step, reclaim their place on top of the Central Division, and position themselves as championship contenders, they had to endure the pain of playoff disappointment.
Here's Allen. Can he get it off? He does. It is Allen.
In a hard fought, five-game playoff series, the Indiana Pacers defeat the Milwaukee Bucks 96-95 to win the fifth.
On May 4th of the prior season, Indiana Pacers superstar Reggie Miller was breathless at center court, standing next to his sister Cheryl for a post-game interview at Conseco Fieldhouse in Indianapolis.
All right, let's go to Cheryl with brother Reggie.
Reggie, I know you're absolutely exhausted. This has to be the toughest first-round playoff series that you've ever been in.
That we won, yes. Right now, you got to give Milwaukee all the credit in the world. We might have won the series, but they were the better team.
In a best-of-five first-round series, the eighth-seeded Milwaukee Bucks had just pushed the top-seeded Indiana Pacers to the brink. The Pacers barely escaped, surviving a thrilling do-or-die Game 5 that ended with a final score of 96-95. A few weeks later, Miller would lead his team to the NBA Finals, but standing there after the series against the Bucks, he saw another contender taking shape in the Central Division.
They really outdicked us and outfought us for five games. We're fortunate to be moving on. George Karl really had his team prepared. I think experience won out tonight, but it shows what a younger team can do.
In the visitors' locker room, Bucks star point guard Sam Cassell was surrounded by the media. Cassell had championship experience, winning two titles in his first 2 years in the league, playing alongside Hakeem Olajuwon on the Houston Rockets. This was the second year in a row the Bucks had lost in the first round to the Pacers, so Cassell wasn't in the mood for making excuses.
The guys, you know, it's no more wins for us no more. We growing up as a team, you know, and it should hurt.
But he did make a prediction.
That's how the game of basketball goes sometimes, but discouraged? Not at all. This team is not that far. We need, you know, we add a piece here, add a piece there, you know, keep our core unit together. I know for a fact that we'll move on farther next year.
And that's exactly what they did. 25 years ago, a generational team would make the deepest Bucks playoff run in 27 years.
7 seconds. Kareem with a big pressure shot. Nothing but that again.
After their run in 2001, it would take another 20 years for the Bucks to go further and finally bring an NBA championship back to Milwaukee in 2021.
It's over. The Bucks have done it. The long wait has ended. After a half century, the Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions once again.
The 2000-2001 Bucks brought life to the Bradley Center and brought together the city of Milwaukee like no other team in decades.
Playoff fever surrounds the Bradley Center. During the regular season, the best home record in the Eastern Conference. This is the place to be.
Even today, for Naismith Hall of Famer George Karl, who was the Bucks head coach that season, in such a decorated career, he had never seen anything like it.
Of all the great runs that I've had, the city of Milwaukee was as into or electrified more than any other city I've been in. I mean, I've gone to the finals in Seattle, went to the conference finals in Seattle and Denver here. Had a lot of fun in playoff basketball. That was probably as much fun as a team coming together and finding that playoff magic that no one expected. I know it's almost 25 years ago, but it was crazy. The streets of Milwaukee was wild and electrifying. It was definitely a special run.
And so much of that excitement and expectation was due to the star power of the Bucks' Big Three.
Robinson, step back three! Yes! Yes! Doggy Robinson! Doggy! He's an all-star! Doggy!
The longest tenured Buck on the team was also the most highly touted coming out of college. The 1994 NBA draft class was loaded with talent. So when Milwaukee entered the NBA draft lottery with the fourth highest odds of landing the top pick, there was hope they would have a chance to jump up and pick one of the three most standout players in the draft.
Most NBA observers say one of these three players will go number one. Purdue's versatile forward Glenn Robinson, the 6'8" junior who led the nation in scoring this past season, averaging 30 points a game, is perhaps the top pick. Another possibility is three-time All-American Grant Hill. Duke's 6'8 swingman played in three NCAA title games in his 4 years in Durham, winning twice. And if it's a point guard thereafter, Jason Kidd of Cal could be the man. This past season, the 6'4 sophomore enhanced his reputation as the nation's best at his position.
But minutes after the Bucks won the 1994 draft lottery, Bucks head coach and general manager Mike Dunleavy was being interviewed by Bob Costas and couldn't help but reveal which player he wanted to see the Bucks pick at number one.
Here's Milwaukee in the number one spot, and here is Mike Dunleavy joining us. I mentioned Vin Baker did well with him last year, but now you have the number one pick overall. What are you going to do with it?
Well, I think from our standpoint, you know, we need size. Obviously, I need to go back and talk with my owner and see, you know, where we stand and his possibilities of doing anything with the pick, but I like Glenn Robinson a lot.
That season, Purdue University's Glenn Robinson was recognized as the National Player of the Year after an historic season. In fact, no college player since has averaged more than his 30.3 points per game that season. So even with the legitimate hype around top prospects Grant Hill and Jason Kidd, the sentiment that Robinson was the number one player in the draft was basically unanimous. Former Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat writer Michael Hunt understood what all the excitement was about.
I covered some of his games at Purdue, especially when they played Wisconsin. He was always scoring 40-plus on Wisconsin. He was a man against boys in college. You know, there was just such a huge separation between Robinson and the rest of the NCAA that year. There was no question that he was going to be the number one pick.
For former New York Times sports writer Mike Wise, Robinson's offensive skill set was unmatched.
I mean, he could score from anywhere. He had a lot of, like, he was like George Gervin with a better body, and he was stronger, and it didn't matter whether he was going to the basket or he's on the perimeter, you gave him the ball and was in the bucket. And I think that's what was the selling point on him.
So when the Bucks were on the clock at the NBA draft, they drafted Glenn Robinson with the first overall pick. And the big dog became the face of the franchise.
With the first pick in the 1994 NBA draft, the Milwaukee Bucks select Glenn Robinson from Purdue University.
The Bucks got their guy at number one, but according to journalist Michael Hunt, one major issue lingered over the offseason.
And the only question was, were the Bucks going to be able to sign him?
Even before the draft lottery, reports suggested Glenn Robinson would try to negotiate the NBA's first ever $100 million contract. Meanwhile, the Bucks owner, United States Senator Herb Kohl, was focused on his re-election campaign that summer and trusted the Bucks front office would find common ground with Robinson on the deal. This is his longtime aide, Joanne Anton.
Well, he kept all of those things very separate. You know, his first priority was to the people of Wisconsin. He went to work every single day. He had long departed the Kohl's business, and the Bucks were here. He had staff in place. He had leadership in place. But again, he was passionate about it. And he often said that, you know, when he would travel around the state and try to talk about taxes or talk about legislation, most people just wanted to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks.
And so the contract became a recurring point of discussion on the campaign trail.
There was a great moment. It was around the time that he was campaigning for re-election, and Big Dog, his contract was coming up. And again, as he campaigned, people were very opinionated about whether or not he should sign Big Dog, because it was going to be the first max contract of its time. Now, you know, they're very common, but he had one day where he went out and he would always joke that his staff didn't script him that day, and that we were all waiting with bated breath when a reporter said, "Are you going to sign? Are you going to sign Glenn Robinson?" And he said something to the effect of, "You know, I think I'm going to take his contract and he can have the team."
Because at the time, compared to his reported request for a $100 million contract, the Bucks franchise was valued at roughly $77 million.
And it was just such a great moment. He always said, you know, my staff didn't think I came up with that line on my own. But when he did, it sort of solidified how he felt about max contracts and also the financials of owning a basketball team. But that was, you know, we know what happened.
It was a few days before Election Day and one day before the regular season when Glenn Robinson finally signed a record 10-year, $68 million rookie contract. The Big Dog was officially a Buck.
We know he signed Big Dog, and we know that, you know, those are the kinds of investments that owners have to make in trying to build a successful team. So he had a lot of fun on the campaign trail because everybody loves the Milwaukee Bucks.
And from the moment he took the court in a Bucks uniform, Glenn Robinson was a force to be reckoned with. Robinson scored almost 22 points per game during that 1994-95 NBA season. And since then, only Allen Iverson and Blake Griffin have averaged more points per game as rookies.
And the Bucks made him the number one pick in the draft. Now they're unleashing him on the rest of the NBA.
I think it's pretty amazing for a guy to come into a team without training camp, without a preseason, as a rookie from college, a junior in college, into the NBA, and lead this team in scoring. It's remarkable. This guy's got lots of talent. Everybody's heard about it around the country. Led the nation in scoring last year at Purdue. Glenn Robinson has landed big here.
I checked with Magic Johnson just to make sure he was legit.
And?
Magic said he is one of the finest young players that he has ever seen. Yeah. Good enough for me.
The 2000-2001 season would be Robinson's seventh season in the NBA. He was coming off his first All-Star appearance and had helped lead the team to the playoffs 2 years in a row. His teammates saw firsthand how he had become one of the most dominant players in the NBA.
Big Dog was unbelievable.
Here is Darvin Ham, a forward on the Bucks that season.
Well, I've never seen just an effortless score. Another guy, three-level score, get to the rim, could finish with the best of them. Mid-range, probably one of the best mid-range games in the history of the NBA, and could knock down threes as well. Signature long socks. Guy just wasn't about a bunch of hoopla. I just wanted to hoop.
This is Scott Williams, a veteran big man on the Bucks that season.
Special. Dude was, you know, a big, small forward, could play power forward. He could rebound the ball. He could shoot from mid-range. He could play with his back to the basket. He could knock down a triple. at the time, you know, 25 years ago, there wasn't a lot of dudes that could do what he could do. So, yes, you know, anybody haven't seen his highlight tape, his YouTube tape, definitely go take a look at the way Glenn Robinson played. I mean, they called a big dog for a reason. Probably still to this day doesn't get all the flowers that he deserves.
While fans in Milwaukee rejoiced when Glenn Robinson was drafted to the Bucks with the number one overall pick, Bucks star guard Ray Allen received a different reception at the legendary 1996 NBA draft. The roller coaster night started when Commissioner David Stern stepped to the podium with the Bucks' fourth overall pick.
With the fourth pick in the 1996 NBA draft, the Milwaukee Bucks select Stephon Marbury from Georgia Tech University.
Fans at a draft night watch party in the Bradley Center went wild at the selection of Stephon Marbury, a player that had been projected to be Milwaukee's target in the draft.
Well, that's what the NBA draft is all about, isn't it, folks? The emotion overcoming Stephon Marbury taken in the first round by the Milwaukee Bucks.
There's also tears of joy out there in Milwaukee from Vin Baker and Glenn Robinson because now they've got someone, although Sherman Douglas is an excellent point guard, they've got someone who can not only defend but get them the ball consistently off penetration.
Meanwhile, Ray Allen expressed some confusion sitting next to broadcaster Craig Sager after he was picked fifth overall by the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Well, Ernie, this is kind of a surprise. Everywhere that Ray Allen interviewed, he made a very favorable impression. Everybody loved him. Senator Cole wants him to run his campaign. I asked him where he was going. He said you didn't know. And here you picked by a team where you didn't even interview.
It's very interesting because Danielle Marshall went to Minnesota, and I never thought I'd make it to Minnesota, but Minnesota's a great city, and they have a great organization, and I'll be ready to play there next year.
But before long, the TNT telecast reported that a trade was underway.
Little news. Rick Pitino just said it. Ray Allen, look for him to be traded. Some people speculate Portland, but look for him to go to Milwaukee to Milwaukee for Stephon Marbury, and Minnesota will get Marbury, and something else will be given a lot of our stuff. But those two, Ray Allen and Marbury, should be exchanged either today or sometime in the near future. Watch that.
Back in Milwaukee, general manager Mike Dunleavy and head coach Chris Ford announced the trade to fans at the Bradley Center and were almost booed out of the arena.
Oh, it was profound disappointment. They booed.
Sports writer Michael Hunt described the scene and how the criticism of the trade affected Allen.
It hurt Ray quite a bit because that's the kind of person he is. It affected him very much that he would be booed like that. Ray was a little bit under the radar that year. Connecticut was a high-profile program, has been for a long time. But Marbury had the name. Georgia Tech had this pedigree, Bobby Crimmins, all the great players that came out of there. So it was a lot of hype, about Marbury, where Ray was pretty much an unknown at that time.
Longtime Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports columnist Gary D'Amato saw how the fans' reaction to draft night was ultimately something Ray Allen used as motivation.
Obviously, the fans underestimated Ray and what he could do. He had a great college career at UConn, obviously, but I think the Bucks fans probably viewed Stephon Marbury as the better player at that point. And so I think that's where the disappointment came from. I think Ray carried that chip on his shoulder and probably did throughout his career.
As skeptical as fans were, All-Star Bucks teammate Vin Baker had his own bias against the rookie Ray Allen when they first played together at Summer League that offseason.
Drafting Ray, a UConn Husky, I'm from Connecticut, went to the University of Hartford. I must admit, like, there's no rivalry there, but I always had this, like, disdain for UConn Huskies. And now we draft the UConn Husky. I don't think I've ever said this out loud before, so this is the first. But so now we draft this rookie. And interestingly enough, when we drafted Ray, we played in the summer league together after we drafted him, and we didn't even speak for the first time. Like, we were in the gym, and I was like, yeah, he's my rookie. And he was, you know, here you have, like, the biggest player of the year, one of the up-and-rising stars in the NBA. And we drafted him, and we literally passed by each other in the gym and didn't even speak.
But the vet who would earn his third All-Star berth and become a third-team All-NBA selection that season couldn't deny the talent in his rookie teammate.
Interestingly enough, his rookie season, I offered him to live with me. So Ray lived with me his rookie season in the third ward in Milwaukee. So we had a great relationship. His first year, my only year there with him, my last year with the Bucks, we had a great relationship. A super talent. You could see that, obviously see the potential. I will admit, I didn't know that he was going to go on to be a Hall of Fame basketball player. You saw the great potential, but you can never pick and see a guy's going to be a Hall of Famer in the first 6 or 7 months of his career. But Ray had the talent, but I think more importantly than the talent, he had the character and the work ethic. And again, you don't know where that's going to take you, but obviously he had the goods to be one of the great shooters that we've ever seen in our game.
And it wasn't just the athleticism and shot-making on the court that impressed Bucks fans. It was his commitment to the community.
Well, he was someone who really decided to become part of the community, something that Bucks fans weren't used to. Players didn't really embrace the community. Ray did. To the point that he lived in a duplex on the Lower East Side down around Ma Fisher, somewhere around there. He and his brother shared just a normal duplex, and he was part of the city.
This is former Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat writer Michael Hunt.
He would go to the bowling alley there. You know, he would go eat at Ma Fisher's. He was just a regular neighborhood guy. He loved it, and the fans loved him back because he ingrained himself so much in the community of Milwaukee. People loved him because he really, really loved Milwaukee.
More on Behind the Bucks, presented by Gallagher, coming up after this.
Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher. Trust is the foundation of any successful partnership, especially when it comes to managing risk and planning your future. That's why businesses turn to Gallagher. With over 95 years of experience, Gallagher has the expertise to help businesses navigate complex challenges and seize new opportunities. As a proud partner of the Milwaukee Bucks, Gallagher is dedicated to building confidence together. To learn more, visit AJG.com. Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and H&R Benefits consultant.
To the rack.
That's the Ray Allen that you used to see at University of Connecticut, slash to the basket and finishing the play strong.
Allen showed flashes of star potential his rookie season and earned a place on the all-rookie second team. But movie director Spike Lee saw something even more in him. Lee cast Ray Allen in a leading role in his film, He Got Game. In Allen, the Bucks had more than just an up-and-coming talent. They had a movie star. This is longtime Sports Illustrated writer John Wertheim.
Ray Allen was in He Got Game, and at the time you'd say, oh, an athlete's in a movie, and you figure they're playing themselves, or they've got a cameo. This was legit acting, and he actually carried it off quite well.
By his fourth season in the league, not only would Ray Allen join Glenn Robinson for his first Eastern Conference selection at the 2000 All-Star Game, that summer he would reunite with Vin Baker on Team USA at the Olympics in Sydney, Australia.
It was neat to be on the Olympics with Ray. I'd made a cameo for him in his movie, He Got Game. So we had a friendship. And so once we met in the Olympics and saw each other in the Olympics, it was nice to reunite and then certainly to reunite for that cause.
Vin Baker, who was now playing for the Seattle Supersonics, could see the growth in his former teammate's game.
And so there was no surprise to see the level he had reached by the time we saw each other in 2000. He had the talent, had the ability, but, you know, Ray never cheated the game. He worked hard on his game. He obviously was a great, great shooter coming into the NBA, but it continued to improve. So it was fun, exciting to be on the team with him to see where he had grown to. Like, I don't think a ton of people really paid attention to the fact that him and I had played together for a year, but it was really cool to see how far he had come.
Journalist Gary D. Howard was the sports editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that season and traveled to Sydney to cover USA basketball's quest for a gold medal. From Team USA's opening game against China, Howard saw the competitive spirit in Allen, who was motivated to prove he belonged among the best players in the world, even if he was coming off the bench at the Olympics.
Them winning that Olympic medal, the way Ray came out in that first game against China, established himself as a, like, I'm going to be a part of this team. I'm not going to just come off the bench. I'm going to kill. When I come in, I'm ready to go. And that's exactly what he did because his mindset changed. As a starter, maybe he would have helped facilitate a little bit earlier. But when he, since he was coming off the bench, he scored, he grabbed rebounds, he did everything that he was supposed to do. And to watch Ray, watch Ray's career blossom the way it did, I thought as Olympic Games in Sydney in 2000, in September of 2000, was certainly a catalyst for him and his chase for superstardom.
Going into the 2000-2001 season, Ray Allen was seeking to build off his first All-Star appearance, an Olympic gold medal, and a playoff performance where he led the Bucks in scoring and pushed the top-seeded Pacers to the brink in the first round. To Howard, Ray Allen was becoming one of the most dynamic offensive players in the NBA.
From a basketball, pure basketball standpoint, Ray was that guy. Like, he literally was that guy. He was amazing. He could jump out of the gym, like a 40-inch vertical. He could handle the ball. He shot like nobody's business. He had everything that you needed to be a superstar.
By the 2000-2001 season, Big Dog Glenn Robinson was a star in his prime. And Ray Allen was showing that he could be one of the great players in the NBA. But in order for the Bucks to reach their potential and make the type of playoff run that fans had waited for over a decade, they needed a veteran with championship experience, a star who knew what it would take to triumph in the big moments.
Sam was fearless.
This is Bucks forward, Darvin Ham.
Sam had a fearlessness. I think anybody that knows Sam Cassell's career and what he was able to do as a rookie coming into the league as a young guy with the Houston Rockets and the role he played and them winning back-to-back championships is second to none. Him coming to us, just an immediate leader. It was one of those things, man, where he was vocal. He knew how to go at guys. He knew when to be playful and lighten the mood. But he also knew when to turn up the heat.
Point guard Sam Cassell was an important role player on the Houston Rockets, with his clutch scoring performance off the bench helping them win two titles during his first two seasons in the NBA.
Here's Cassell for three! Sam Cassell coolly hits from downtown to get the Rockets a one-point lead.
But four seasons later, he was becoming a journeyman in the league. At the trade deadline of the 1998-99 season, he was traded to the Bucks. Milwaukee would be the fifth team he played for over the last four seasons. But playing alongside Ray Allen and Glenn Robinson, he would help the team break a streak of seven straight seasons where the Bucks missed the playoffs. Bucks head coach George Karl knew Cassell would be the player who would take his team to the next level.
I thought Sam was a winner. He and I had a very, very good connection.
For local reporter Michael Hunt, who covered the team throughout their dog days, he saw firsthand the impact Sam Cassell had on the Bucks.
He was a guy who bounced around a lot, but I don't think it was because he was a problem, he was a troublemaker, the usual reasons guys get traded in the NBA. And what Sam brought, he brought a couple of things. He had championship experience. He had those two rings from the Rockets. And he also brought a swagger. The Bucks really didn't have a swagger at that time. For all Ray's talent, you know, Ray's not a swagger guy. You know, for all of Robinson's shooting ability, he really wasn't a swagger guy on the court. And Sam was able to bring that. And that was something that the Bucks needed because they didn't really have much of a personality. And he was kind of able to galvanize that.
To then New York Times reporter Mike Wise, Sam Cassell brought a winning attitude to a Bucks team that was learning how to compete in the NBA.
If Sam Cassell is about anything else, it's winning. He was going to do what he had to do to win, even if it wasn't 100% his game. He was a winner. He was going to, if he had to score 30, he was going to score 30 for you. If he had to defer to Glenn Robinson and Ray Allen and shoot Lindsey Hunter, whoever, you know, he was going to do that.
The big three of Glenn Robinson, Ray Allen, and Sam Cassell brought an excitement to Bucks basketball that the team had not had in over a decade. But it wasn't just the talent on the court that raised expectations for what the Bucks could do going into the 2000-2001 season. It was also the reputation and the experience of their head coach, George Karl. During the seven straight seasons in the early to mid-90s that the Bucks were missing the playoffs, George Karl was coaching the Seattle Supersonics into one of the league's best teams. He averaged over 58 victories a season as the Supersonics coach. But after a 61-win season with the Sonics, he was fired by the team in 1998.
George Karl may have been one of the league's best coaches during his stay in Seattle, but those days are gone. Karl was fired after the Sonics went out in the second round of this year's playoffs.
That summer, he accepted a lucrative offer to become the Bucks head coach because of the connections he had to some of the great coaches in Bucks history and his relationship with Bucks owner, Senator Herb Kohl.
Best friends in coaching, three of them were in Milwaukee when I met him. Don Nelson, Rick Majerus, and Del Harris. If I have seven really good friends in basketball, they're on that list. And I always enjoyed hanging out in Milwaukee with Nelly. And without him, I don't think I have a career, to be honest with you, without Nelly. And then Majerus was my connection to Herb Kohl. I didn't know Herb until Rick and I met with him. One summer we got together and talked about the possibility of being in Milwaukee. And I love Senator Kohl. He's eclectic in a lot of ways, but he loves the Milwaukee Bucks. He loves basketball.
George Karl's son Kobe Karl was a teenager when his father was hired to coach the Bucks. Kobe saw firsthand how George's success in Seattle motivated him to bring the Bucks back to prominence.
He was on fire from Seattle, right? Like, they got so close and they built something at such a high level that he came in with this confidence of, we're going to do it again, right? And I felt like, looking back on it, that he just brought this confidence to his group that they're going to figure it out and they're going to win. You know, they're going to play hard and they're going to play together. And that's what he did almost every stop he made along the way, was he brought this mentality of toughness, mentality of together. I think he just came in with the chip on his shoulder and he wanted to prove himself as a coach. And he had this underachieving young team that he felt like was really talented, but wasn't performing at the level that they could. And he believed in them. And then I think they ended up believing in him.
The bet on Karl's experience paid off. In his first season, he led the Bucks and their new Big Three back to the playoffs. And after another playoff appearance the next season, the Bucks were finally getting attention from the national media as a potential threat to win the East. New York Times reporter Mike Wise explained why he wrote at the time that this could be the year the Bucks could break out in the Eastern Conference.
One, George had a wealth of experience, including with the Seattle Supersonics, whom he led to the finals. A lot of people thought very highly of George Karl as a coach. There were just so many elements of timing and talent meshing, old guys, new guys, and a coach that knew how to put it all together, that made sense. It made sense they would be there.
But what no one predicted was the team getting off to a disappointing 3-9 start. And with the expectations that this could finally be the year the Bucks would compete to be among the best teams in the East, the pressure spilled into the locker room.
We were 3-9. We were splintering, and our chemistry wasn't very good.
Bucks veteran forward Scott Williams.
Guys pointing fingers, bickering with one another, whether it's offense, saying that you're not getting me the ball where I need to get it, or how I need to get it, where I need to receive it, forcing shots, thinking, because if I don't shoot this, the ball's not going to find its way back to me. Those types of things lead to a lot of negative talk amongst players. You start to form little groups, two and three, talking about another group of maybe two or three. And you can't have that dynamic if you're going to have success as a team.
Head coach George Karl resorted to a tactic that could have derailed the entire season. He went after his stars in the media, and he didn't hold back.
I'm a very passionate, and I love the NBA, and I love coaching, probably to an addiction. And I just thought they were underachieving in many, many ways. And I just went, instead of taking on the whole team, I took on my stars. I took on Len, Sam, and Ray.
He called them selfish. He called them millionaire babies. He even told Sports Illustrated writer John Wertheim that his young star, Ray Allen, was a Barbie doll.
It's funny, I mean, again, this was 25 years ago. It's a different time in media access. It's also a different time in sort of coach-player dynamic and who had power. And you would do these stories. And I remember you do, Jerry Stackhouse or Allen Iverson or Antonio McDice, and you'd go and you'd do the stories, and inevitably you'd talk to the coach, and Doc Rivers would say, Tracy McGrady's going to be a star in this league, or the Raptors coach would love Vince Carter, or, you know, the Mavericks would talk about how Dirk Nowitzki is so versatile and he's got such great length and can shoot so beautifully. I had a nice day with Ray Allen. We talked about basketball. We talked about his life. You go talk to George Karl and you're expecting him to say great things portend for Ray Allen, the smooth shooting two guard. And he basically used the interview, I think, to sort of needle the player. And I remember Darvin Ham was on the roster and George Karl loved Darvin Ham. And basically said, if all my players had Darvin Ham's toughness and Darvin Ham's aggression and assertiveness, we would win the NBA title. And I'm sort of thinking, but I'm here to talk about Ray Allen, your all-star two guard. And I remember George Karl, I remember he was trading commodities on his computer during the interview in the Bucks offices. Basically said Ray Allen's a great shooter, but now needs to learn how to toughen up and play some defense. And, some of this is George Karl's MO. Again, this is 25 years ago, different point in the culture, different point in the sports culture, different point in the athlete-coach power dynamic. I cannot imagine today too many coaches saying to a reporter they're meeting for the first time, Charlie's a Barbie doll. He needs to toughen up.
Here's former Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports columnist Gary D'Amato.
Calling out players like that, that just doesn't happen today. You don't do that publicly. Coaches don't do that publicly anymore. They might say things to beat reporters, off the record about players, but they don't want to see that in print about the whole Barbie doll thing and everything. And George, I think, was making a point with Ray. Just don't be so worried about your image and, do the things, the little dirty things it takes to be a complete player on the court. And, Ray was very image conscious as a player.
For Bucks beat writer Michael Hunt, there was a method to George Karl's madness.
George was a master psychologist. He knew what he was doing, and his tactic was this. Every day in practice, when they started off 3-9, I would go to practice every day, and it was almost like a game. George would come to me and he would pick out a player and he would rip them mercilessly all over them. And it was a tactic. He wanted to see how this team would respond. And this went on for about a week or so. And all of a sudden they turned it around. And that's George. He was always thinking a few steps ahead of everybody else. He was a master psychologist, a master manipulator, and it worked. The thing about that tactic, you only get one shot at that, so that's all he had. That was it. But it was the right tactic at the right time. It angered players to the point that, okay, we're going to win in spite of him. We're going to do this. In the upshoot of that, the bottom line, it was a gifted team coming together right about then when that awful 12-game streak was over.
The players themselves were just as disappointed in the team's slow start as their head coach, and they challenged themselves to play together to turn the season around. Here's Bucks big man Scott Williams.
George has his tactics to try to get the best out of players. You agree with some of them, you don't. I mean, I'd been MF'd by a number of Hall of Fame coaches, so I just was more concerned of what it was they were telling me that they wanted me to do, whether I was capable of doing that, whether the criticism was fair or unfair. Yeah, pro athlete. Even a guy like Ray Allen was a third-team All-NBA that year. He was an all-star. He was just outside the top 10 in MVP balloting. Coach decided that maybe that's a button that he needed to push to get Ray going.
This is Bucks forward Darvin Ham.
I just remember, it was a different time then. Coaches were more hard-edged. It was just guys just manned up. And I thought, that was George's way. He would do things like that to challenge his team. And he would call things out just like they were. It rubbed guys the wrong way. But then when they really took a look within themselves and look at how our group was built and what the potential was for us to be able to do, I think guys, at the end of the day, use it as fuel to come together and make a run.
For New York Times sports writer Mike Wise, with the season on the line after a disastrous start, George Karl had to trust his instinct and risk losing the locker room in order to save the season before it fell apart.
Well, he's not the first person to blow a gasket. He's not the first person to be obsessed with winning. That was just him. I think his level of frustration, he wasn't going to sugarcoat it anymore. And when you get to that point, it either backfires against you or your team goes, oh, crap, now he's pissed me off. Now I'm going to play. And the Bucks started playing.
But it wasn't just tough love that would lead the Bucks on a generational run through the regular season and the playoffs.
Milwaukee has the buzz. Playoff fever surrounds the Bradley Center.
It was a veteran leader stepping up to bring the team together.
I talked to George that we needed to do something, to do some bonding.
The team's stars trusting their teammates and bringing out the best in one another.
Sam, in my opinion, has been our MVP. I think he's the guy that's made Glenn and Ray fit.
And a coach willing to let go of forcing the team to play in his image and instead adapting to letting them play how they were destined to play.
I had to change from a demanding defensive intense team of playing defense first to be more open-minded.
We cover all this and the dramatic first-round playoff series versus the Orlando Magic on the next episode of Light It Up, Season 7 of the Behind the Bucks podcast, presented by Gallagher.
I mean, those are sore loser comments. But one thing you have to watch about comments is that people do read the paper and people do remember what you say. Hopefully, we'll have a nice vacation present for them after the end of the game.